Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA, Human Rights Hour Power, a justice field hour of talk, solidarity, and worker power, right here on KYOK 1140 AM in the all new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us home with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us for every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power Radio Show this morning. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreement, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns if you support workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup with you this morning, or for you this morning, with Makia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, Timia Wiley, and Tay Atkins. So don't you dare change that dial. We'll be talking about Ethnic Equality Awareness Month, the Union Buster of the Week, DEIA attacks, and labor rights, and how can I help you? And last but not least, we've got to definitely spill some tea this morning. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 26 months striking on the picket lines. And yet, while they're striking, they're still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. And once you subscribe to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/PPG-donate. And I just heard someone shout, "When we fight, we win." You are correct. CWA, our power radio show, 1 year anniversary is today. Happy anniversary. Can you believe it? CWA, our power radio. CWA Hour Power Radio Show is officially 1 year old, a whole year of amplifying labor voices, tackling tough issues, and keeping it real about what's happening in our workplaces and communities. Time flies when you're raising awareness around human rights in the best way. This show started as an idea, and now look at us. 1 year later, still pushing for labor rights, equity, and truth. How does it feel to hit this one-year mark? We will all discuss it in a couple of weeks on a special anniversary show right here on KYOK 1140 AM at the all new 106.5 FM. Reuben Burks, we honor a man whose legacy is woven into the very fabric of the labor movement, a man who shattered barriers, uplifted workers, and never wavered in his fight for human rights, civil rights, and labor rights. That man is Reuben Burks, the first Black Secretary Treasurer of the United Auto Workers. His story is not just one of personal achievement, but of collective progress, of a movement that dared to challenge injustice and demand dignity for all workers. Through his leadership, the UAW continued its historic role in fighting for economic justice, racial equality, and workers' rights, not just in America, but across the world. Mr. Burks' journey into the labor movement began in 1955 when he started working as an assembler at the General Motors Company's former Fisher Body Plant 2 in Flint, Michigan. He became an active member of the UAW Local 598, quickly recognizing that the strength of labor movement came not just from its numbers, but from its ability to advocate for the dignity and rights of all workers. Burks was not content to be a passive member. He was a leader from the very start. He served his local membership as a committee person and on the local executive board, working to ensure that his fellow workers had a voice in decisions that affected their jobs, wages, and working conditions. He saw firsthand how Black workers were disproportionately assigned to the most grueling and unpaid positions, but he also saw the potential of the UAW to challenge these injustices and create change. Burke's leadership in the UAW grew under the guidance of President Walter Reuther, one of the most progressive labor leaders of his time. Recognizing Burke's dedication to the movement, Reuther appointed him as an international representative in 1970, a pivotal moment that expanded Birx's influence beyond his local and into the national labor movement. As an international representative, Birx worked tirelessly to ensure that labor rights and civil rights were not treated as separate struggles. He understood, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. did, that economic justice was fundamental to racial equality. Under his leadership, he fought for affirmative action in hiring and promotions, ensuring that Black workers and other marginalized groups were given fair opportunities for advancement. His dedication and commitment to justice propelled him even further. In 1989, he was elected as the director of the UAW Region 1C, representing workers across Michigan and continuing his fight for fair wages, safe working conditions, and inclusive union leadership. In 1998, Reuben Birx made history once again when he was elected as the first Black Secretary Treasurer of the UAW, the second highest office in the union. Serving from 1998 to 2002, he was responsible for overseeing the financial health of one of the most powerful labor organizations in the world. But his role extended far beyond managing budgets and balancing books. As Secretary of Treasury, Birx ensured that the union's financial resources were used to support organizing efforts, defend workers' rights, and strengthen the UAW's ability to fight corporate greed. He knew that the power of the union was not just in its leadership, but in the collective strength of its members. During his tenure, Birx also helped guide the UAW through a time of major economic and political changes, fighting against anti-union policies and advocating for strong collective bargaining agreements. His leadership helped protect thousands of jobs, improve workplace conditions, and maintain the UAW's reputation as a progressive forward force in both labor and civil rights. Birx understood that the struggle for workers' rights did not stop at the factory doors. He championed policies that ensured workplace safety, fair treatment of all employees, and equitable wage across race and gender lines. He stood firmly against union-busting tactics and fought to strengthen collective bargaining agreements that protected workers from corporate exploitation. His vision extended beyond the borders of the United States. Under his leadership, the UAW stood in solidarity with workers around the world, fighting against unfair labor practices and supporting international movements for economic and social justice. He believed that an injury to one was an injury to all, and he ensured that UAW remained committed to this principle on both a national and global scale. Today, as we continue to fight for economic justice, racial equity, and worker empowerment, we must remember Reuben Birx's example. He showed us that progress is never given. It is won through organizing, through struggle, and through an unshakable belief in justice. His legacy lives on in every worker who refuses to accept discrimination. It lives on in every union leader who fights for inclusion and equality. And it lives on in all of us who believe that human rights, civil rights, and labor rights are not separate struggles, but one fight, one movement for dignity, fairness, and justice. Reuben Birx's back broke barriers, but most importantly, he built bridges. Bridges that connected labor to civil rights, economic justice to racial justice, and workers to a future of greater opportunity. It is now up to us to walk across those bridges, to continue the work he started, and to ensure that the labor movement remains a powerful force for human rights in the 21st century. So let us honor Reuben Birx not just with words, but with actions. Let's organize, let us stand together, and let us never forget that when we fight for one another, we win for all. You are tuned into KYOK 1140 AM at the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org or on your CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Next up, we have Reginald Small sitting in for Mykia Jones discussing Ethnic Equality Awareness Month. Good morning, Reginald.
Good morning, Errol Miner, and good morning, KYOK radio listeners. Errol, I just want to shout out to you for that little history tidbit, and I always look so forward to hearing the historical point of view that you share with us every week.
Thank
Today,
you.
I'd like to take some time to discuss two important observances that both take place in February: Ethnic Equality Month and Black History Month. Though they share the same month, they each serve distinct purposes, and together they help to promote a powerful message of equality, inclusion, and respect for all ethnic groups. Let's begin with Ethnic Equality Month. This observance is dedicated to raising awareness about the importance of diversity and inclusion. It's a time to recognize and appreciate the contributions of people from various ethnic backgrounds, but it also serves as a call to action against the systemic inequalities that many communities continue to face. Ethnic Equality Month encourages us to reflect on the progress we've made, but also to think about the work that still lies ahead to create a more just and inclusive society. It's not just about celebrating different cultures, but actively challenging the barriers of discrimination that exist in our schools, communities, and workplaces. Now, in the same month, we observe Black History Month. Black History Month is a time to honor the remarkable achievements and contributions of Black Americans throughout history, from civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks to artists, scientists, and activists. This month highlights the invaluable impact that Black individuals have made in shaping the cultural, social, and political landscape of the United States. It's also a time to remember the struggles and hardships that Black communities have faced, particularly the history of slavery, segregation, and the ongoing fight for racial justice. Black History Month is an opportunity to learn, to reflect, and celebrate the resilience of the Black community. So you may be wondering, how do these 2 months connect? While Black History Month focuses specifically on the history, achievements, and struggles of Black Americans, Ethnic Equality Month broadens the focus to include the recognition of all ethnic groups and the collective fight for equality across the board. Both months emphasize the importance of educating ourselves about the diverse cultures that make up our society and highlight the fact that despite our differences, we all deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. One of the key connections between the 2 months is their shared goal of raising awareness about the challenges faced by marginalized communities. Black History Month highlights the specific challenges faced by Black Americans, such as systemic racism, economic inequality, and social exclusion. Ethnic Equality Month, on the other hand, addresses these same issues, but in a broader context, advocating for fairness and equal treatment for all ethnic groups. It reminds us that discrimination and bias affect various communities, whether it's based on race, national origin, or culture, and we must all work together to dismantle these systems of inequality. Another important connection is the celebration of contributions. Black History Month specifically celebrates the extraordinary achievements of Black Americans, showcasing their contributions to every aspect of society. Ethnic Equality Month similarly celebrates the diverse contributions made by individuals from a variety of ethnic backgrounds, whether it's in the arts, the science, politics, education, or social justice. People from all ethnic communities have enriched our world in countless ways. These celebrations encourage us to value and respect the unique perspectives and talents that people from all ethnic groups bring to the table. Lastly, both months highlight the importance of education and dialogue. During Black History Month, schools, museums, and communities hold events, discussions to educate people about Black history and culture. Ethnic Equality Month encourages people to engage in conversations about race, culture, and diversity, creating opportunities for learning and fostering mutual understanding. It's about breaking down stereotypes and opening up avenues for empathy and connection. In conclusion, both Black History Month and Ethnic Equality Month play an essential role in shaping our understanding of race, equality, and social justice. While Black History Month honors the legacy of Black Americans and their ongoing struggle for justice, Ethnic Equality Month encourages us to expand our perspective to include the fight for equality for all ethnic communities. Together, these months offer us the chance to reflect on a shared history, celebrate our diverse cultures, and commit ourselves to a more inclusive future. Now back to you, Errol.
Thank you so much, Reginald Small. You're listening to CWA Our Power Hour on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, or Podchaser. Up next, we have the Union Buster of the Week with Timia Wiley. Good morning, Timia.
Good morning, Errol. Good morning, KYOK listeners. Today, we're diving into a powerful intersection between labor unions and the civil rights movement, two forces that at first glance might seem separate in reality, but share a common goal, equality and justice. So I just wanted to talk to the, up to you all about that. So we don't have a specific union buster today, but I want to talk to you about the civil rights movement and labor and how they go together. So let's start by understanding what each of these movements was about. On one hand, we have labor unions fighting for the rights of workers. They were pushing for better wages, improved working conditions, and the protections of workers from unfair treatment. Then on the other side, we had the civil rights movement, which was fighting to end racial discrimination and secure equal rights for African Americans. But here's the twist. Both movements were working for the same basic thing, equal rights and social justice. They just approached it from different angles. For labor unions, that meant fighting for fair treatment in the workplace. For the civil rights movement, it meant pushing for racial equality in all aspects of life. And where do these two worlds collide? Well, both movements were pushing for economic justice. The civil rights movement wasn't just about desegregation and voting rights. It was also about creating a fair economy, one where African Americans weren't being left behind in terms of jobs and wages and opportunities. That vision was very much in line and with what labor unions were fighting for, fair wages and equal opportunities for all workers, no matter their race. Now, here's where things get interesting. The two movements weren't just running parallel, they were working together. Labor unions, especially organizations like the AFL-CIO, played a big role in supporting the civil rights movement. They backed key pieces of legislation like the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. These laws helped to break down legal barriers of discrimination. And oh, by the way, those laws are under attack now. And this connection wasn't just political, it was personal. Many union leaders also played leadership roles in the civil rights movement. Take A. Philip Randolph, for example. Randolph was a prominent labor leader who worked with Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights leaders, but he helped organize the iconic March on Washington in 1963. So y'all see the correlation of the two. That was a demonstration that spotlighted both labor and civil rights issues. At the march, workers of all backgrounds stood side by side calling for economic equality and racial justice. Their message was equality in the workplace should go hand in hand with equality in society. They wanted better wages, better jobs, and a world where your race didn't determine your opportunities. So what does all this mean? It means that these two powerful movements, labor unions and the civil rights movement, weren't just parallel struggles, but were deeply connected in the fight for social and economic justice. The battles for fair wages, workplace equality, and racial equality were woven together, and together they helped shape the world we live in today. So I conclude what I want to say: when we look back at the civil rights movement and we look back at labor unions, we see that they were both about the same thing, creating a more just society. And when they come together, their combined strength lead to powerful change. So that's our episode of Union Buster of the Week. I hope that you will take that information, and when people talk to you about unions, or they want to say that unions are a bad thing, remember that unions go hand in hand with the civil rights movement, and what they fight for is the same thing: civil and economic justice for everyone. Unions are not a bad thing. Errol, I'll toss it back to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Timya. And we must send out a huge thank you to everyone who joined us on last evening for our inaugural CWA National Human Rights Movie Night. It was such a success. Last night, we came together for something truly special, the inaugural CWA National Human Rights Night and we Movie Night. And we could not have done it without the most engaging and thoughtful audience. Thank you to everyone who tuned in and participated in the discussion and made this event such a powerful moment of learning and reflecting. That was at the River Eye Stand. Stay tuned because we will be doing this every month, fourth Wednesday of each month. And I want to go ahead and give you a plug right here that we will be viewing the 6888 on March 26th at 7 p.m. You can always check us out on our CWA Human Rights page. Today, we're diving into a critical discussion that affects every worker and every union and every marginalized community. The escalating attacks on diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA, and what they mean for labor rights. Across the country, corporations and politicians are rolling back DEIA policies, weaponizing false narratives about fairness while protecting the same old systems of privilege and exclusion. These attacks aren't just about cultural wars, they're about power, profits, and keeping working people divided. They undermine fair hiring practice, suppress wages, and erase the very programs that uplift workers from all backgrounds. So, what does that mean for the labor movement? How do we fight back? And most importantly, how do we turn this backlash into a renewed push for worker solidarity, economic justice, and real accountability? Well, we'll be breaking it all down today, from corporate hypocrisy to political agendas to the strategies unions are using to push back. So, guess what? Here comes all of the hosts getting engaged and remembering this discussion. So, we already know that when we fight together, we win together. So, let's get into it. All right, hosts, are you guys ready?
Yes, we are.
Ready,
Y'all
ready,
don't sound
ready.
like y'all ready this morning.
Ready. I got my coffee. I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, so how are attacks on DEIA policies undermining diversity in the workforce? Let's talk about it.
Well, Errol, let me just start off by asking, for the sake of the show and for the listeners, and this is a peculiarity in me, let's not use the acronyms DEI. Let's actually say the word diversity, equity, and inclusion, and in this case, accessibility. I believe those acronyms have been weaponized against us and turned into something negative. Words such as diversity, which is positive, such something as simple as inclusion is positive, and equity certainly is. So set the stage there. Let's use the words.
All right. So the attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion as well as accessibility, it manifests the erasure of programs designed to diversify hiring like affirmative action. And we've already seen that the role of affirmative, the rollback, I should say, of affirmative action in college admissions and hiring practices allows companies to prioritize workers, white candidates, white workers, and perpetuate systemic inequalities in hiring practices.
It also removes those, safeguards as far as the workplace that makes it inclusive, makes it to where you come and you're hired, and you're able to be hired even though you have a physical disability or things like that. I think that when Reginald says we want to say the words, it's because we actually need to have people look up what those words mean. It doesn't mean that this is just, again, we go into this a lot because people are seeming to forget that diversity, equity, and inclusion was for everyone. Everyone. So the effects is when it comes into the workplace, now not everyone is included anymore. You can hire based off of what you see. If I like this person, if I feel like this person, I want them to come in. So it's basically we're pushing ourselves all the way back. So we fought for something, we fought hard for something. We were ahead, and now we are being dragged all the way back to the beginning.
So this allows the employers to disregard the race, gender, and other factors leading to a workplace workforce that lacks representation of, or I should say, diversity. Would that be correct, Reginald? A diverse workforce of
Yeah,
all communities.
that's exactly right. And when I look at this from a common sense standpoint, Errol, the world is a diverse place with the United States, let's be more specific, is a diverse place made up of many different kinds of people. It seems like the companies, the workplace should be reflective of that same makeup. So it's just ensuring that it's a diverse workplace. And accessible to all kinds of people. And let's just put this out here on the table. All this unqualified bunch of rubbish. Let's get that out of the way. That's not what this is about. This is about giving people the opportunity, qualified people, the opportunity to have the equal chance at succeeding in the workplace. That's what this is about.
Because it was systemic barriers that kept marginalized or BIPOC communities, Black, Indigenous, people of color, out of these particular positions.
Yes,
Yeah, it wasn't
exactly.
just
Okay. The biggest recipient were white women. The biggest recipient of DEI, excuse me, diversity and inclusion were white women. So let's see how this backfires. Go ahead.
So, are you saying it did not benefit
It benefited
POCs?
us, but they were the biggest recipient. We're only 14% of the population. And Black women are like 6% of the population. It gave us accessibility, but you still had to be qualified once you got there. And nine times out of 10, you had to be overqualified as a person of color.
So,
So
it did not promote. Go ahead, Reggie.
it goes back to the power at that time in history, and you always got to take a look back in 1961 when there was a need, and I'm speaking affirmative action now, when there was a need for an executive order to come forth, you have to remember who was in power making all the decisions, deciding who was worthy and who actually had the merit to, to gain these positions, who handed out the crumbs from the table. So who was in power? So yes, white women definitely benefited from it and or the recipients of it, women, period, and of course people of color. But anyway, now it's just the marginalized communities. It was there to help give them the accessibility. And even in 1961, when the idea came about, the executive order was signed, they still didn't comply. So we had to come back years later to force, and again, I'm speaking affirmative action, to force the companies to actually follow the rules and order, which changed history. What we thought changed it forever, but now we're coming back. Now there's a different kind of attack with diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is the same kind of resistance that was held with affirmative action.
Correct,
So
but they
go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the media tries to portray diversity, equity, and inclusion as a crutch for people of color or a handout for people of color. It's not a handout, it's not a crutch, it's just accessibility because it makes it accessible for you, but you still got to be able to open that door. You still have to be qualified to go through that door. It's for some reason it's kind of like the Wayfair queen, how they try to, it's like a negative connotation on Black people when we aren't the biggest recipients of welfare. We're not the biggest recipients of DEI, and that's all I want to say. I'm gonna step
And we're
back.
not the biggest recipients
Of anything is what I would like to say.
Thank
As a
you.
person of color and a woman in this country, I have never in my life received anything or the majority of anything over any other demographic other than education, period.
All right. So
Yeah.
when we're looking at this, and I see these comments all the time, I hear these comments all the time on radio and social media, DEIA, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, it promotes racism.
You mean that the programs promote racism?
Or do you mean reverse racism?
Well,
I beg your pardon.
Go with
I too have I've heard that. And again, I'm one of these people that I like to hear both sides of an argument. And I've not been in a position to hear the intelligent side of that other argument. But from where I sit, that's not the
I
case.
think that's nonsense. It goes back to them putting a black face on it. They automatically put a black face. Anytime you hear diversity, they stamp a black face on it. And we're not the biggest recipients of it. So whoever, in my opinion, whoever's argument that is, they need to have a seat, several of them.
Okay, and
But
just to clarify, let's go back. So racism is the discrimination or antagonism by an individual, community, or institution against a person or a people on the basis of their membership in a particular racial or ethnic group, typically one that is a minority or marginalized. So I'm perplexed, flummoxed, astounded at how someone can take DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion, and say that it's racist when racism is the exact opposite of inclusivity.
But
So,
if you're of the narrow mindset that in order to ensure something, for me to come up takes something away from you, which in my opinion is removing your power. I don't know how I can't get in people's head. But if you're of the mindset that ensuring dignity, respect, an inclusive feeling, equity, if you're in the mindset by me gaining that's taking something from you, then you could go there.
no, you
If
cannot.
you're of that mindset, it's a
But
perception.
me to see, here's the difference though, right? I think it would be one thing, and just hear me out with this. If diversity, equity, inclusion wasn't diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it was Black people, equity, and inclusion, then I can see how you put it in racist because it's one group being put above other groups, right? Diversity, equity, and inclusion is, again, accessibility for all groups, all people, all demographics, all genders, all abilities to have access. So I don't, that's why I'm not comprehending. And maybe I'm just thinking a little too factual here when I'm thinking about the words that are being used and described for this thing, but I cannot see the correlation between, in any capacity, between racism and equity. It just, like, it doesn't make sense.
Something that I want to highlight is a lot of the time the people who talk about these programs have never even attended these programs. They've never been included in these programs. So they're going based off of someone else's opinion. So what I will say is you hear that it may be, oh, these are racist pro, these are to teach racism or whatever the case may be. But a lot of the times when you have a conversation with that person, like, well, what training did you go to? What diversity and equity inclusion training did you attend that made you feel that way? They normally say, well, I just heard that's what it's about, or I just heard that's how it goes. So I would say that a lot of the people who have opinions about it, ask them if have they even taken one, and then ask them, well, what made you feel that way in that class? You're going to hear a big percentage of the time that, no, I didn't personally take it. I just heard that this is what it is. People don't educate themselves. Everyone just goes with what someone, it's like the game of telephone when we're young. Someone tells me something and I tell someone else and it goes down to 10 people, and by the end of it, it's a mess.
But Reginald, within our implicit bias training, when we fall back on that, the power, the prejudice plus power equals racism. Could we tie that all into this?
Of course you could. Of course. Power is the key. Power,
That's
who's holding the
right.
power, and who, and whatever their perception is with power, and coming out of that class a little bit, propaganda, if you put propaganda in it, you done got yourself into a whole nother entity. I think this whole thing, a whole lot of this is misunderstanding and deliberate propaganda. You put all that together and you've created a whole movement. You created a whole movement against something where people actually believe it and they think they're right. That I mean that planes are I mean planes are not flying right because there are unqualified people that are behind this. I mean it's bigger than just a program now. It's a whole movement to dismantle this. And it goes back to who wants to hold the power.
So when we start talking about equity, what does equity mean in the context of labor, and how are we seeing this up under attack?
Well, the whole thing is under attack because I think, I mean, I think diversity, equity, and inclusion. All three are under attack in its it's being knocked out of its truest intent for certain. To me, the equity piece is providing the opportunity based upon the need of the individual. That's where that comes in. So I and others will look at that as if you're just gonna cut out the slice of the pie and throw it out in equal slices to everybody. And I don't, that's not the intent. I think Maikia last week explained that in a very particular way. But it's meeting
Well,
people where they are in order to help them succeed.
correct. Equity is about leveling the playing field,
Yes.
so everyone has access to the same opportunities. And what we're seeing with these current attacks, such as cutting the safety, social safety nets, defunding the public programs, and repealing worker protections, this further entrenches systemic inequities in the workplace. We now have people right in Huntsville, Alabama, who are now getting an extra $100 taken out of their checking accounts for power bills. These are the individuals that needed assistance.
I'm sorry, run that back. They're what are they paying for?
They were had a social program helping them with their power bill, and since it has these new actions and policies have been enacted, now they are being debited out of their checking accounts $100.
I'm sorry, they're being made to pay it back because the program
Yes.
did it?
Yes.
I beg your pardon. There was
I'm
a
just telling
program, a
you.
federal program or statewide or some kind of program instituted to help people. And then once the program ended, they're now being made to pay it back. Am
I'll
I
shoot you
understanding
the
correctly? Please,
yes,
because
I will shoot you the
I can
article.
see, I can understand, okay, the program is over. You have to now just pay whatever your bill is because, okay, right? That makes sense to me, even though it's wrong, because obviously these people can't afford it, but that makes sense to me. Like, okay, this is your bill. You now have to pay the bill because we no longer have this program. What I don't understand, and I need somebody to explain to me, like I'm in the third grade, is how after a program ends, you are made to pay something back when we couldn't afford it in the first. I'm confused.
Exactly.
Well, I'm a
Okay.
little bit confused on that, and I think we perhaps need to get a little bit more clarity on that. But I think the key to that is be on the lookout because these things are being dismantled and it will further injure people in marginalized communities.
It will, and that's why labor unions are so important, and that's why they go hand in hand with the civil rights movement. And that's why I'm proud to say that I am a union member because being in a union does level the playing field. If you look at the statistics of women and people of color who are in a labor union, they make more money, they have better wage, what do they call it? Living, how do you call it when
Living
you standard
wages.
of living?
Oh.
Is that how you say it?
A
They have a
better
better
standard
standing
a
standard of
better standard
living.
of living, yes.
Yes. And it takes out the whether my boss likes me or not, do I get a raise? It takes all of that out of your life, that stress out of your life, and it levels the playing field. It gives you an opportunity to earn a fair wage.
And then that last part, and you're absolutely right, Tamia. And the last part of that, because I think our clock is ticking, but the last part of that is this inclusion. And I've always said this, and I've heard this, and it resonated with me that that's a feeling. You can't measure that. Diversity, you can look at it, you can see it, you can see it. Equity, yes, you can kind of even chart that. But inclusiveness, you have it's an actual feeling. Who wants to be in a workplace or in any environment where you've been pitted against and you've become the victim and you no longer feel included? And I believe that is what's happening in our society as we like a childhood term, that we pick on certain groups of people and we're doing it in such a public way that they're no longer feeling included. And what kind of United States of America, what kind of workplace is that actually creating?
You're absolutely correct on that, Reginald. And you are right. Our time is going by. This episode is going by so quick. It see, an hour is not long enough, is it? For real. For us being talking about this. When we're talking about inclusion, how are our inclusion efforts being challenged in the workplace? It's so in depth with everything that is going on. And yes, we can talk about this all day. And we're going to put this on pause. We'll probably pick this back up on next week. But let's get the rest of the show in, and we'll come back to this at a later date and time. We need to jump on over to the Tea with Tay, because she has some hot tea to spill this morning. Good morning, Tay.
Good morning, KYOK listeners, and to my union family. And it is always a good discussion when we get into something everyone is passionate about, right? Lost track of time. But I want to get into our segment today. You know, we spill the truth, we serve the real, and we uplift our people here on this show. We are going to be talking about the attacks, and we will never miss the opportunity to highlight the attack on the Department of Education. The Department of Education is under attack. Do y'all hear me? Education is fundamental right, but the latest budget cuts prove our rights are under attack. These cuts don't just sink school funding, they disproportionately harm marginalized communities, working class family, disabled students, and those who are already fighting for access to quality education. When they slash public education, they tell us who deserves knowledge and who does not. Let's be clear, defunding public schools while expanding privatization and censorship and modern day Jim Crow tactic. These attacks keep marginalized communities undereducated and underpaid. This is about controlling the future by controlling what we learn and who gets to learn. We refuse to let them rewrite our history or block our children's opportunity. These budget cuts that we are talking about, they're unnecessary. We are aiming for the wrong things. There are so many things that we could look into, but the Department of Education should be the last thing on the list, I definitely believe. I want to talk about mental health and what we're doing as far as cutting and defunding programs that support mental health. Now, I am a big advocate when it comes to mental health. I do not believe that we can be successful in life if we cannot function daily. If your mind is not okay, then how does your body work? How do you get through your day? Mental health is a worker's right. It's a woman's right. It's a human rights issue. And yet defunding the mental health services is being cut at a time where people are struggling more than ever. For women, especially black and brown women, I will tell you, access to mental health care is already an uphill battle. There are so many challenges when it comes to getting help, and we carry a lot of weight when it comes to caregiving, workplace discrimination, economic instability, and oftentimes we have no support in these areas. Instead of a solution, instead of finding a way to assist and make these things better, we have a system that is stigmatizing mental health struggles, criminalizing those in crisis, because we don't understand, or because they don't understand, does not mean that it is not real and it is not an issue. But let's talk about our labor movement. When it comes to mental health, our workers are burnt out. We are under attack in every angle, and we are burnt out, traumatized, and pushed to our limits. And then the response that we get from corporate or the people who are supposed to re represent us, the lawmakers, it's silence. Have you heard anything about promoting any new mental health programs or supporting the community when it comes to mental health? The same administration gutting mental health programs is the same ones fighting against your paid sick leave and your workers' protection. This is about control. It's no longer about what is needed. It's simply about control, keeping us exhausted, isolated, and they think unable to fight back. But we see the game and we refuse to play by those rules. We, as workers, we are ready. I want to talk about the Project 2025 just really quick, because no one really believed what Project 2025 That Project 2025 was harmful and what it could do to us. It's a direct attack on our freedoms. If you don't know about 2025 yet, Project 2025 yet, then I think that it's time you start paying attention. You need to know that this is a blueprint for an extreme takeover, one that will dismantle women's rights, labor rights, civil rights, and our democracy itself. And to be very honest, it's already started. If you don't see what's happening, then that means your eyes are not open. The budget cut bill being pushed right now, I'm sorry, the budget cut bill being pushed right now, it's a preview of what is to come. Again, the attack on labor protections, making it easier for corporations to exploit workers, as if that's not already happening. Civil rights enforcement, weakening protections against discrimination, public education and healthcare, stripping away those resources from the working class families, DEI, and we're going to add that A because it means a lot to us right now. Programs, rolling back decades of programs for marginalized communities, reproductive rights, restricting access to healthcare for women. This is just not about dollars and cents anymore. It's about power and oppression. They're rolling back everything that we as people have gained and everything that we have fought for, which is not right. And I'm telling you all, we cannot let this happen. We cannot let this happen. It is time for us to stand up and fight back. Now, I know the tea was hot today. I know I gave us a lot. I do want to go out of my segment on a lighter note for us. Remember to take care of you. Before we end, we want to talk about the importance of Heart Awareness Month and taking care of yourself and understanding that the stress that we are going through, the things that we are keeping inside, those put us at the highest risk of heart disease, stroke, and high blood pressure. These things are serious. You should be checking in with your doctor often. I want you, I'm sorry about that, y'all. I want you to take care of yourself, basically. When we talk about Heart Awareness Month, it's about knowing the signs of heart disease. There's some heart diseases that you may not have known you have because you if it's grown over time. But make sure you go to the doctor. Make sure you ask for the EKG. Make sure you're doing this often, and make sure you're doing this for your children. We are already fighting healthcare issues. So I'm very, very extreme when I say I know that, you know, the healthcare cost is going up and things like this, but y'all, we got to take care of ourselves. So please, 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 during Heart Awareness Month, use this time to schedule yourself a doctor's appointment, get that exam. And I am going to leave this with, it's time again that we just, as far as the attacks on us, that we fight back, we organize, we will not back down. We demand full funding for our public schools that teach the truth and not propaganda. We demand workplace protections that include mental health and healthcare access. We demand reproductive justice, equal pay. We demand that our labor movement stands firm and against every attack on human rights. This is our time to educate, mobilize, and again, the most important part, take action, because our rights are not for anyone to dictate. That our rights are not for anyone to dictate. We will protect them together. So I'm gonna end my episode. I'm gonna pass it over back to you, Errol, but please, please, please take care of yourself.
That's right. We got to stay woke, stay organized, and stay in the fight. You're listening to Communication Workers of America, CWA Human Rights, Our Power, a justice filled hour of talk, solidarity, and worker power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on KYOKradio.org. You can listen and subscribe to us every Thursday, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific on KYOKradio.org or the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player. Search for CWA Hour of Power, your favorite podcast player. And I just want to dab into this just 1 2 minutes. How can we support you? How can I support you? All hosts, real quickly. Today, we're going to get personal with attacks coming from every direction on workers' rights, diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility, voting rights, healthcare, and even our right to organize. It's easy to feel overwhelmed, frustrated, and even alone in the struggle. But here's the truth: you are not alone. And my question this morning is, how can I support you? This is a discussion about amplifying the voices of historically marginalized communities. So, first part I just want to talk about with the host is bridging generations and marginalized voices in the labor movement. We've got to understand the generational differences in activism. Come on here, Reginald. You and Makia are really into this right here. Baby boomers and Gen X, they tend to rely on traditional organizing methods like picket lines, in-person meetings, and structured negotiations. But the millennials and the Gen Z are more likely to use digital activism and social media and decentralized organizing to push the change. So, what are your thoughts on this, real quickly?
Now, what you're not about to do is go ahead and strike that match and try to get us to get this over with in the next 2 minutes. You know, Reginald and I talk about this literally weekly. Okay. We have a weekly generational divide discussion. And that's something that we're going to end up getting into on our next episode because there's no way you think me and Chatty Cathy over here are going to be able to get into all of this in the next 2 minutes.
Don't think so. I don't think
Y'all
so.
are not good players this morning.
No, because you're trying to pour gasoline. You want us to light the match,
He trying to have us do the Super Bowl just in the fourth quarter. Like you can't play the game like that. You can't give a 2 minute warning and say, hey, but go play the whole game.
But I will say this, Errol, really quickly here, there are definitely differences. There are differences in styles, but no wheel needs to be reinvented. I think both groups, to sum it up in a nutshell, will have to listen and pay attention to the other group so that we can come together true, and and use our collective power for the good. Technology is something we can't do anything about. We need to embrace it. But as you present technology to a particular generation, you don't need to exclude them as if we don't speak the same language. You need to make it inclusive. And that's all I'm going to say before my Kia has her little word in here.
All right, so we got it right there. So we're gonna have this on our next show, and we'll discuss that more in depth as well. And again, can you believe it? CWA Our Power Radio Show is officially 1 year old today. It's our
Yay!
anniversary. Happy anniversary, everybody.
I'm waiting for my gift.
She's always waiting for a gift from.
Hello. You're too young for a gift from someone from my generation. Let me tell you something. Gifts are not part of the generational divide, baby. Everybody likes a good gift. And I'm gonna get my good gift from you next week because I'll see you all next week during our Selma Jubilee anniversary events in Alabama.
Yay.
That's right. That's right. We will see you at the 60th anniversary of the Selma Montgomery March next week. As we come down to the final minutes of the show, our Union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside striking on the picket lines. And yet, while they're striking, they're still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to their free publication, unionprogress.com, and continue to support them at cwa.org/ppg-donate. And I just heard someone shout, "We are one." That's right, we are one. February is Black History Month, Ethnic Equality Awareness Month, Heart Healthy Awareness Month. Take action and learn more today. When you take time to learn about others around you, you're making the world a better place. Awareness campaign serves as a powerful reminder that there are steps we all must take in looking out for loved ones, the people in our community, and those who have been impacted. It's time to take one big step together and make a change. All right, guys, an hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Our Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM, KYOKradio.org, or your favorite podcast player. Happy anniversary, and we will see you next week.